Podcast. Welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I'm Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and the Times Picayune. We're going to talk about the Pelicans stadium situation on this show. I got Adam Silver to comment about the Pelicans arena situation. Their lease is about to expire next summer, so there's some news there. But first, we got to talk about the brooms. The Denver Nuggets got out the brooms and swept the Los Angeles Lakers into the hall closet. Anthony Davis, you dust bunny. Have a good summer, man. That's all, folks.
Oh, the Cancun. The Cancun is already just dripping off of everyone. We're gonna have ESPN live shots over LeBron's shoulder to try and bump the ratings of the finals. We're gonna have a camera crew on LeBron watching him as he boards the plane, watching him as he gets onto the tarmac, anything to get his like name involved in and around the finals. Oh, it's crazy that they get the lead that they get, and then they get outscored by 20 points in the third quarter. I told you, I texted you there in the middle of the game, and I was like, I'm sorry. The way that I look at this team, the way that I look at the Nuggets versus the Lakers, if Jokic hasn't made his mark on the game yet, if Jamal Murray hasn't made his mark on the game yet, and you're barely winning, you're doomed. You're doomed. And sure enough, that third quarter happens, blows the game completely open, and it's a 4 to 6 point game the round. And it was messy basketball in the fourth quarter. It was really just like all over the place. But, you know, at the end of the day, you look up, you're like, did Joker have a good game? I don't know. But then you look at his stat column, you're like, holy shit, just another triple-double, you know. Sure. Just throw it out, sprinkles it out like candy, takes shots that look absolutely ridiculous, gets another one of those three-pointers that's defended by AD very well, and he does like this trebuchet bullshit from behind his head, and it goes in. Just impossible.
So Dirk had the one-legged fadeaway that he popularized, and if you look at that shot, he was raising his right leg into the air, and he was a right-handed shooter, so it was the... you know, raising the same leg as the guy to hand. Jokic does the opposite of that. Like it's like the weirdest shot ever, man. It makes no sense that he's coordinated enough to do that. He is like one of the biggest hand-eye coordination freaks I think we've ever seen in the NBA. Like his hand-eye coordination is 100 out of 100, like up there with like Larry Bird and I don't know. I mean, anybody. I mean, it's like insanity. Some of the stuff he does with his hand eye. I feel like I can give a little perspective here. Like I started covering the NBA, you know, part-time in Denver. My first season I started doing this was 2016-17. And that was Jokic's second year in the league. Jokic and Yusuf Nurkic were starting together at power forward and center that year. Balkan buddy ball. The Nuggets were kind of rudderless. They were rebuilding. They were coming off of, you know, like George Karl era, you know, Ty Lawson that had really flamed out because, you know, Ty Lawson had a bad drinking problem, unfortunately. And they're just trying to figure out, all right, do we have anything here? And it became apparent that season Jokic was better than Nurkic, which was a surprise because Jokic was a second round pick and Nurkic was a first round pick. And they kind of decided that year, oh, like, let's send Nurkic away and let's just build around Jokic. And I was a Jokic true believer, but I have to say I am a little bit surprised we're here. I mean, this is incredible, man. I mean, I think he has seized the mantle of best player in the NBA right now, which, whew.
We're about to do some revisioning right now where this is going to be one of those dudes where we've criticized him a certain way for the last 5 or 6 years for what he hasn't achieved. And then he's going to go out here and do all this shit. And we're going to go, you know, maybe we were wrong this entire goddamn time.
Well, weren't. I wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I just, it's the general Jokic conversation the last few years is like, you know, especially this year with the MVP voting, it's like he can't have it again. He hasn't won anything. It's like you look at his team and how healthy or unhealthy they've been. Porter Jr. has not contributed in a a third star away to this team. He's a role player. Aaron Gordon steps in and goes from like Orlando tweener kind of misfit guy to extreme role player, and him and Porter Jr. combined end up equaling like having a third star, and one of them can do something different every night. And Jamal Murray, like you told me this before the playoffs started, you said Jamal Murray is a real thing. We've seen it before. We've seen it whenever he's healthy. The struggle is just that he doesn't stay healthy in these moments. And he's here, and he's had waffling performances. He's had a couple of games where he hasn't shot lights out, but he's had a couple of games where he has. And it just so happens that it's shown up whenever they needed it to. Add to that, that Bruce Brown can just be whatever the hell you need him to be. You need to be a guard? No problem. You need to be a wing defender? No problem. You want to switch him onto a big? Whatever. He can do whatever. And the Lakers, especially, the poetic justice of this sweep is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. The fact that he gets sent away from LA, has to spend that terrible time in Washington, finds his way to Denver, and becomes a foundational rotation player for them, starts a ton, and he's a great defender who could shoot a good bit. Like, there's just a lot that he can do for you, and he's a smart player. It's crazy that they gave him up when they did, and they just, like, Denver's just better. 1 through 8, they're better. And, you know, that's before we get to the fact that the same conundrum that has always existed around Anthony Davis once again is here. He can't dribble. He can't create his own shot.
Yeah, he's not an offensive engine. And that's, you know, one of the many differences between him and Jokic. Jokic is an offensive engine. You can run the whole thing through him at the highest level. And Anthony Davis is just not that guy. Like, it's clear what the Lakers need is, you know, like a guard playmaker type next to those two guys. And I don't know if they can swing that or not. I mean, D'Lo just couldn't do that in the playoffs. I guess that was kind of the idea of him. But it's clear that's what they need. And yeah, Anthony Davis was pretty great on defense throughout this playoffs, but 6 of 15 in elimination game. They got a great performance from LeBron, old man LeBron. I mean, admirable stuff from him, but they needed more from Anthony Davis. And he's just not that guy. I mean, he can't be the guy on a championship team, I don't think.
Yeah. And we haven't even gotten to the fact that it started the fourth quarter. Who's playing? Not him, but Tristan Thompson, because that's where we are. That's how dire things were getting. D'Lo's bench to start the game. AD's bench to start the fourth quarter. Tristan Thompson is, like, honestly, for Tristan Thompson expectations, bar set down here. Tristan Thompson's actually out there overachieving. He's banging left and right trying to get boards. Like, he was fighting his ass off. So, you know, good for him. But, yeah, we talked about, like, the trade that the Lakers made to fix their roster for this season. I think we had the correct take on it when we said it was a great trade for them. It's great that they didn't give up the additional first round pick. It did a lot to fix their roster and their rotations. However, it didn't do a damn thing for them long term. It gave them a shot to do something this year. What that shot was, how far that shot was going to go, who knows? And we see Vando fall out of the lineup. We see Malik Beasley almost unplayable.
Yeah, hasn't played in forever.
almost unplayable throughout the playoffs. And, you know, they made a decent value trade to do something this year to reshuffle the deck. And now they have less assets and they're facing a similar conundrum next year with no cap space and a, you know, second best player to me consistently throughout the playoffs for the Lakers is Austin Reeves. And now he's got to get paid.
Who is their best player in your mind?
I mean, LeBron's still their best player, even though he was choosing his moments. Like, I look at him, I judge him through a different lens now with how old he is. Like, when he wants to do it, he does it. When he wants to do it defensively, when he wants to get to the rim, he can. Like, tonight was the heroic effort. LeBron's going to put you on his back. I'm not going to let us get swept. And just nobody met the moment to help him stop it.
I'm not here to defend AD, but I thought he was their best player throughout this playoff run. Like, some of the stuff he did on defense was incredible. I mean, offensively, he's just going to have nights like he did tonight. He's just kind of he's just not a complete player on that end.
It's just so tough. I mean, I'm going to be jaded against him his entire career, because we just never saw it here. We had the same questions. We had the same warnings, and seeing it all manifest exactly all the same concerns. Like, the reason he played well in this playoff series, why? He played center. Like we've all said he always needed to do. Like we've all said he could be one of the best centers in the entire league. He would be top 2-3 every single season, but he hates playing center. When he does, it works. And they also lucked out in the sense that because there is this, like, not necessarily this wild rim presence from Denver, he gets to do this rover thing still. They find a way to put Rui Hachimura on Jokic and move him around in ways that allows Anthony Davis to fly around and be rover guy. That's him at his defensive peak. He gets in a matchup where he can't play rover, then it's not the same impact. And it just so happens like the matchups have worked out that way, that he got to play that way. But, you know, you put him in front of the rim and make him go man on man, it's not the same deal. So, you know, I just all the jadedness, all the bias, it's all still here. Still hate him. Love that this happened for him. Very excited for his vacation. And for the emergence of Rui Hachimura, and for, you know, the reemergence of Tristan Thompson.
This Nuggets playoff run, I mean, Jokic has been, I think, the best player in the playoffs. Jamal Murray has been a legit number two guy, which I think was a legitimate question mark coming into the playoffs. Can he be the second star you need for a team that wins multiple rounds? But the playoffs and the Nuggets so far have been a reminder to me that teams win playoff series and teams go to championships. Like, this has been a team performance. It was Aaron Gordon defending LeBron in the second last possession of the game and forcing him into that miss. It's KCP, as you said. It's Bruce Brown, indispensable off the bench. Like, you know, to quote The Wire, all the pieces matter. It's so true. Every single piece matters. Teams win championships. You need individual greatness from your stars, but you have to have it from a lot of places. And the pieces have to make sense together, and they do in Denver. And shout out to Calvin Booth for, you know, like, that was a tough spot. You come in for a guy who's well-liked, who did a really nice job, and Tim Connelly. You say, okay, we're going to go get Bruce Brown. We're going to swing this trade for KCP. And then he was on Christian Brown in the draft. Like, put three, you know, versatile, switchable perimeter defenders around Jokic. Like, that's kind of the formula. Like, you got Jokic, got your big bodies, you got some shooters, and you need to put some switchable defenders around him, because you got to contain on the perimeter, because Jokic's one weakness is if guys get to the rim, they can score on him. So you have to prevent that as much as possible. And Calvin Booth and the Nuggets did things to address that.
Yeah. Aaron Gordon, you know, when they make that trade, pulling him out of Orlando, we all look at it and go, I don't know how this is going to work. Like, can he really shoot? What's he going to look like? And he didn't become like some crazy spot up shooter. He made some big shots for him in moments when he was left unguarded. But the biggest thing,
he's a tight end in Denver.
Yeah.
Like, he's a tight end. Like, Jokic just throws him stuff over the top and he's dunking everything.
He just catches everything. Yeah. He catches everything. He is a nonstop finisher. And that's the thing I was going to get to, is like, he is not an offensive zero. He is a defensive ace. He is switching across everybody. And offensively, he's not a zero. And not only is he not a zero, depending on the matchup, like, yeah, he can camp baseline. He can just sit in the dunker spot, or they can move him around, do some pick and roll stuff. If you get him on the roll, like, he's going to dunk on you because he's a freak athlete. So he just, you know, he doesn't have to put the ball on the ground. If he does, it's just for a power move to try and get fouled and go up through contact. Like, he just knows what he can't do. And he just plays the right way for what they need. He gets in deep. He dunks everything. He goes through contact. And then if they do leave him unguarded for a three, like, he might make that shit. Like, he's just, it worked out way better than I would have thought when they made the deal. And I just, you know, I keep going back to KCP and Bruce Brown because I loved both of those players before this year. I've loved them at most of their stops. I did not begrudge KCP for the back half of the Washington season last year. And I know a lot of people did, like, oh yeah, you know, he sucks. No, Washington sucks. He's a very specific kind of player. He's going to get you steals. He's going to be a good defender, and he can hit threes at a decent clip, but he's just a good player. And it's nice to see him and Bruce Brown get to a team that they can help amplify, because both of them were kind of playing for teams where they were kind of holding the back end of things together. and instead they become like prime rotation pieces, and it really helped amplify that roster and just take some burden off too. Like, it feels like every time I look up, if Jokic and Jamal don't have it going, you know who like randomly does? KCP. He's got like 12 points in the first quarter. Because sure. Like, it just all worked. Denver was the best team all year. And, you know, we questioned it because you look at the back half, that stretch run, and you're like, okay, there's some deficiencies here. Maybe they can't defend. Like, I know a bunch of dumb Pelicans fans were all like, oh, if we got Zion back and we could put some rim pressure on him, then maybe.
Well, hold on. I mean, I know people who work for the Pelicans organization who thought the Pelicans had a chance against the Nuggets without Zion in the first round.
They're wrong. They're just wrong. They're wrong. They're so wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the cool part about this Nuggets run too is like, dude, you can just tell all these dudes are like, the only thing they're thinking about is championship. Like, they interviewed Michael Porter Jr. after game two, and you know, it was a big win for the Nuggets. Like, all right, we're taking a commanding lead on, you know, LeBron and AD. And Michael Porter Jr., like, you could just tell he was like, we got 6-1s to go. Like, and you could tell he meant it too. Like, sometimes guys just say it. You could tell he just meant it. And it's like, I remember when they took Michael Porter Jr., it was like, oh, their maturity concerns, this and that. Like, the guy's got an ego, number one player in his high school class, but his teammates didn't like him at Mizzou. Like, this Nuggets team is so locked in that, like, that guy who's still only 23 years old or whatever he is like, no, man, the only thing that matters is us winning a ring. And, like, that's a special place to get to as a team.
And what a glow up for Mike Malone. Can we just throw that out there?
He gets really pissed if you call him Mike Malone.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. Excuse me. Michael Malone. What a phenomenal glow up this is. Because, like, I think we all thought of him as, like, an okay coach. But when we talk about NBA coaches, you know, we kind of have, like, coaches we think are bad, the middle, which is, like, 15 guys, and then the five coaches that we know are great. And Malone's... he's going up here, and especially, like, he's really starting to knock on the door when he gives me quotes, like, after the third win, where he comes out there and says, AD was defending like hell for 8 seconds in the paint at a time. Like, this man was just, he would not let this go. He was as pissed as any one of his players. He's out here getting teched in the first half, where it was clear fouls, too. Denver was fouling the shit out of LA, and Malone is just out there in indignant, just like, no, me too. You want the fouls for them? Give me one. He just wants to join in the fun. Like, it was the most ridiculous. Like, I was rooting for him as much as the players.
Best tweet I've seen during the playoffs. I can't remember who sent it, but they said Michael Malone is walking around like he's Pac during the playoffs. Like, Michael Malone is just really puffing his chest out, and, you know, like, given like 1940s movie star quotes of like, put that in your pipe and smoke it and stuff like that. It has been a playoffs for Michael Malone, and good for him, man. Like, I tweeted out this interview that Zach Lowe did with Michael Malone right after he took the Denver job, and I think 2014. And just go read that, man. It really gives you perspective of how dire and bleak things were in Denver when Michael Malone took that job. Like, Zach Lowe's asking him about, like, hey, Ty Lawson got this DWI on the way home from a charity event. Like, how are you guys going to handle that one, basically? Like, that's what things were like in Denver, man. So, shout out to Michael Malone for building slowly, steadily. I mean, it is hard to keep your job in the NBA if you're a head coach for a while. Like, Michael Malone has made it this far. I mean, it's, like, incredible to see how far that organization has come. I mean, they were a punchline when he got there.
The thing that I used to think of, like, the first thought that came to mind when you heard Michael Malone, when you heard Mike Malone, like it or not, they called him Mike Malone. When you heard his name, the thing that used to come to mind pre-Denver was like, that's the guy that reached Boogie. That's the first coach that got through to Boogie that Boogie was like happy to play for. And also the coach that he got sniped from. It was the strangest thing, is you felt like, hey, he made Sacramento into a thing that, like, might have to be respected again. And as soon as he did, that's done. And then, you know, then we're waiting to see what the next run's going to be. And like you said, it's like, it's after the Carmelo Andre Miller stuff. It's the in-between part where all the stuff's gone and you're just kind of trying to figure things out. And he gets into the Jokic world, and look, for all the people that want to build teams the most analytically efficient way possible and have the perfect contract and all this stuff, the Nuggets have had to make a ton of decisions around contracts and around cap to move players around. And it's been substantive players. It's been middle to top of rotation players where every couple of years they've had to make a big choice. Jeremy Grant famously wanted a huge role, wanted out of there, and had played well for them. And they said, no, we're not going to do it. And he goes on and he said, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
He shows a spark in Detroit that I don't think any of us thought he had. And, you know, fast forward, and it didn't hurt Denver. Denver goes, okay, well, I'll just go get Aaron Gordon and we're fine now. The core has stayed intact regardless of the injuries with Jamal Murray. They stuck him and Jokic together and said, we're going to do this, and have cycled the pieces around them until they landed on this spot. And like, that continuity has played out. Like, Jamal Murray, for all of the injuries and everything and the, you know, the time that's been missed, he still knows exactly how this team plays. He still has all this familiarity, all this time logged. All he needed was a healthy stretch with Jokic, and every time we've seen one, there it is. And the way
ESPN, some of the talking heads talked about Jokic to me the past couple of years was like kind of unconscionable. I don't think I said that word right, but
unconscionable.
Thank you. It did not make sense to me. Just if you watched him play and you knew, and you actually watched the playoffs and knew that, oh, the Nuggets' second best player did not play in either of these playoff runs because he tore the ACL in his knee. And Jokic, by the way, beat Dame and CJ in the first round pretty much single-handedly with like Facu Campazu and Austin Rivers. It turns out you can't win in the playoffs if your second best player is hurt. I mean, maybe if you have like prime LeBron, you can win a couple rounds. But yeah, most years, no team can win rounds in the playoffs, their second best player. So I didn't get all that. I mean, I just didn't understand it. Heat still have to win one more. The finals, by the way, aren't going to start till June 1st. They're not going to move it up, which, oh my God, what are they going to be doing until then? Which can be
lots of time off.
But the thing I'll say about that series, my early take, if it is the Heat and the Nuggets, I think Bam Adebayo is too small for Jokic, man. I mean, I don't know, like every time they played, like I think Jokic's record against Bam is like 10-2 or something like that. And this is different. And Jimmy Butler, oh my God, is terrifying. And the Heat are making shots suddenly after finishing the regular season, what, 27th in 3-point percentage. But I think Bam Adebayo might just be too small for Jokic.
Yeah. Kevin Love and Omer Yurtseven do not inspire confidence. It's an interesting conundrum over there in that matchup. And I know we shouldn't say anything negative in Jimmy's direction in any way, shape, or form. We should not make anti-Jimmy predictions.
I never will, so don't worry.
Yeah, I won't say it, but I'm just... Denver's got some appeal. Denver's got some real appeal if that's the matchup. And I mean, God, it looks that way. I don't ever think I've seen a conference finals team as deflated as the Boston Celtics are. And it's so wild. Mike Schur, if you listen to the Lebatard show like I do religiously, Mike Schur has been warning us all season as the Celtics rose and rose that his only fear in basketball is that the zombie Miami Heat make the playoffs and then the zombie Miami Heat end up playing the Celtics. It has been his fear all year. He's talked about it 100 times, even when it didn't make any sense and Miami was terrible. And he just kept saying, and he's like, no, you don't understand. They're just going to get to the playoffs and Jimmy Butler's just going to turn into Michael Jordan. And I'm going to sweat and cry every single game. Mike Schur was right. Mike Schur knows the good place versus the bad place. And he knew that that was the bad place. And
did you see that Joe Mazzulla apparently watches The Town multiple times per week?
did I see it? It's the only joke making the rounds about the Celtics right now. What are they doing in preparation for game four? Well, we know they're sitting in the locker room watching the town.
All you do is play Coke. All you do is start Coke and play Xbox.
Yikes.
Oh, Joe Maz.
Look, Ime Udoka and Will Hardy, I think they were kind of important.
I would agree. Okay, let's finish up. I had a story run on Sunday about the Pelicans arena situation. The Pelicans lease at Smoothie King Center is going to expire June 30th, 2024. We're kind of approaching 1 year from that. I've previously reported the Pelicans plan to hit an option, and which will keep them there basically for the rest of this decade. And I reached out to the NBA for comment, and it took a while. Took weeks, it took months, but I got a comment from Mr. Adam Silver. I think the key part of what he said was, hey, look, I'm paraphrasing here, it's good that the Pelicans are going to commission this study on Smoothie King Center. That information will be very useful. But the key part of what he said was, ultimately, every NBA team, regardless of location and market size, needs a model state-of-the-art arena to compete in the league.
It's a nice quote. It's one that's like, honestly, that's what we'd expect. Like, that's what you'd expect to hear around the NBA. I think that's what we've talked about previously. That's what you want for the team. Found the rest of the article very interesting, though, as well, with like what the team has done so far, which doesn't seem like very much. Maybe the most deflating thing was that they've surveyed the fans and the food's okay. That's not true.
Let me just tell you, because I've had these conversations face to face with, you know, some of the high level decision makers. You know, anytime you bring up something like, well, maybe this could be better, their answer for a lot of those things is, well, we've done some polling. We poll our fans religiously, and like, they love this. This is a great situation for them. So
I don't know a single fan that says the food is good. I don't know a single one. Like, the bar's high here, and it's just fried stuff and pizza.
I like crispy crunchy chicken. I'll take down some crispy crunchy chicken. I really will. You know, I probably eat it 3-4 times a year, but yeah, I think an objective person could say it could be a little bit better, you know, in the greatest culinary city in America, maybe.
It just gives away that the polling is maybe not as serious as they might think. If your polling says the food's good, what else are you selling me? Because I don't know anybody that says this is a great food situation. It's like the chief complaint that there is around the arena, that and the in-game experience. Like, in the past, it had been, you know, they've done some things. We got the glass wall. We got a better like monitor in the, you know, scoreboard over center court. They've done better music and stuff. Like, it's gotten better in past years. It had been worse. But it's still like those complaints exist. So if the idea is that like you poll everybody and those things aren't actually a problem, like, that just tells me like, what else are you shoveling?
I have a lot of thoughts about the arena, but my first thought is, I guess I feel like frustrated sometimes because I feel like they don't even pluck the low-hanging fruit. Like the loudspeaker, for example, the sound system is blown out. To me, that's embarrassing. To me, that's just ignoring basic upkeep of the arena. I mean, people who work for the Pelicans like have told me, they're like, we can't even hear when the officials are ruling, you know, on a replay because the sound system's so busted. It's like, that's the type of stuff like you have to take care of that low-hanging fruit. You can make the food a good experience. And, you know, as far as the arena, like I had a fellow, Harrison Williams, tweet at me. So we've reached the era of new arena every 5 to 10 years of major renovations. The SKC is only 20 years old, people. And I think, like, there is some legitimacy to this point of, why do we, like, sports fans in America feel like, oh, this arena is only about 20 years old. Why do we have to knock it down and replace it? Smoothie King Center is 23 years old, by the way. It opened in 1999. And generally, I think that is true. Like, we could all stand to just, like, you know, live with these arenas for a while longer. But I think this is a unique circumstance because this building was built on spec, number one. It was not built with, hey, we've got an NBA team in mind, right? It was just thrown up to try to get another pro sports franchise here in New Orleans. You could read the reporting around that. That plan worked, by the way. Opened it in 99. Hornets moved here in 02. It was also built very cheaply. I believe it was $114 million. I don't know what that is adjusted for inflation. Let's just say, without plugging it into an inflation calculator, $250 million. If you spend $250 million on a stadium today, that's not close. So that's what I would say the issue is. This thing was built on spec. It was built cheaply. It has a tiny lower bowl. I think you brought this up point up before, but you know, like the railroad makes it complicated of expanding the footprint. But yeah, this is tricky. And I think, you know, I think they are going to have to do something sooner rather than later.
The reason that the Superdome has been able to stand and be renovated and re-renovated and re-renovated and no one complains about it housing the New Orleans Saints is because when it was designed, it was a state-of-the-art building that was meant to be here for 100 years. That is not how that arena was designed. It is not built to be redone. It is not built to be re-renovated. It was not designed for a basketball team. That's where all the problems come from. Like, I think you and I are both very reasonable people. If the city's not going to throw, if the city and the state don't want to throw money at it, I can't begrudge anybody if they don't want to do a tax subsidy or anything like that for a new arena or even for renovation. But renovation's has to happen at an absolute minimum. They have one of the worst lower bowls in the entire NBA. Then the upper bowl has such a dramatic steepness from row to row that like those seats can be like kind of gnarly sometimes, like coming down the steps in the upper tiers, like a little nerve wracking. If you've had a couple, like have yourself a good handful of that rail or a buddy system. Cause it's, you know, it's a little steep and it just, you know, the revenue per seat, like I can make that argument, but the biggest thing is like, this wasn't designed for this purpose. We know it's bad. They've known it's bad for years. It kind of frustrates me that the conversation is like, oh, it's not actually a problem. Like we'll do the feasibility study soon. The polling says the food's good. Like, okay. So you don't care. You don't care that this is an issue. That's not a thing. That's the only impression that I get over and over again is that this isn't a thing for you. And I would hope that it would at least be in the front of your mind that a reno's got to happen. And, you know,
And that's my question. That's my question. Do the people who have the most power in the Benson Empire truly care? I think Gail Benson, like, I think she really does care about the Pelicans. Like, I think she, you know, in 2019 on was like, hey, I want to try to make this better. And they've taken real steps to doing that. And like, I think that's awesome. But, you know, like, I think that's a legitimate question. Like, do all the people there who have the power on Airline Drive care about making the Pelicans a first-class organization? I think that's a legitimate question.
We'll let you know when we get around to doing the feasibility study to tell us if we should renovate this bad boy. Not yet complete. Maybe sometime in a theater near you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting comment from Silver. I mean, the Pelicans but did not want me to reach out to the NBA, by the way. Like, I had to work pretty hard to get that, jump through a lot of hoops. So I think that's kind of telling by itself that they tried to prevent that interaction from even happening.
Yeah. I mean,
that was the way I looked at it. At least that was my perspective.
It seems like the minimum will be done when pressure is applied, and they're like the way that it didn't read as adversarial the way that it was written, but the way that it sits in my mind is NBA wants every team, like, and this is the NFL too. Like, part of the reason that arenas and stadiums happen is to further inflate the value of the team so that the next sale of a team goes higher. So that the league value goes up and everybody's average selling price goes higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. We get all that. And so like some of that is like the stadium being a prop. where like, hey, if the stadium's worth $2 billion, then your team's worth $4 or $5 billion, like just boom, like that. I get that. I get that part of that is like, it, you know, it's kind of like a shell game to keep making the teams feel more valuable, but they do have just straight up not like a shit arena compared to the rest of the NBA. And while that may not be a fiery fan problem yet, there are fiery fan problems within that arena. And if we don't have our eyes set on the future for that arena, then like what are our eyes set on for the future of the team? And where does that sit for the league? Where does that sit for free agents? Where does that sit for guys who want to resign here? That's the audiences that really care. Even if the fans aren't in an uproar yet, those people do care. You know, they traveled all these places and they know which ones are good and which ones are shit. So, you know, questions will remain and we'll see which way it goes. I agree with you. Like, I don't see any negative indications from Gale. At the same time, I'd love more than, you know, feasibility study incoming. Food's pretty good. Go hit that 2-for-1 at the Prime station. Get that prime rib, that like $28 plate where you get like the two meats and get yourself in there. Otherwise, like shrimp basket or pizza, you know, do your thing. Which one you want?
I love crispy crunchy chicken as much as the next guy. But we can also have some better options, I think.
Yeah, like just more Cajun corner.
It can be better.
Lots and lots more Cajun corner. If we had 6 more Cajun corners, maybe things would be better.
And, you know, another thing I've heard from, you know, some of the higher ups is like, well, you know, like, well, that's our vendor. Someone else is in charge of that. And it's like, technically that's true. But look, if you guys really wanted to make this good, you can make it good. You have that power. You are like the most powerful organization in Louisiana, basically. If you wanted to make it good, you could.
Donald Link's right here. Like, there's so many dudes. Donald Link, Besh, Shia, all these dudes. They're all right here. They're all just hanging out. Mason Hereford is over here. Turkey and the Wolf. I feel like, you know, you could do something super rad with those dudes. Like, I mean, Mason Hereford just put out a couple of knives based on Nikes. He's got a set of knives based on Nike Airs and Nike Air Force Ones. And they're legit. Just saying, like, that dude's down to get frisky, and we don't, you just never even hear it. You don't hear of him collaborating with any of those people. We're just, you know, basic vendors, you know, running in the baseball team to dole out the jambalaya and call it a day.
Adam, I got some Yakimane in the fridge. I'm going to go heat it up. I'm pretty hungry.
I have a crying child to go deal with. I definitely had a door opened like 5 minutes ago, and that was my wife peeking out to be like, when the hell are you going to be done? Why are those lights still on?
We will be coming at you guys again next week, I would imagine, with some draft stuff. And
unless I'm dead.
Unless he's dead.
Might be. And yeah. Looked pretty testy over there.
Yeah, the finals will, you know, start in give or take 10 or 11 days. So we talked about that, though.
Find something to talk about in between, I guess.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Talk to you again soon.